success hinges on the ball going into the opposition's net once more than it goes into your own. Oh, danger here! Danger
here! And the Soviets have equalized! In other words, we inflict our game on the people. It's true.
Yeah, cuckoo land, man. Cuckoo land.
Bobby Keane! Give it up! Goal
game! All right, Brian, so... Thanks for being part of the podcast, former teammate of mine, I suppose. So we go back to your career, trip to Man City to start with, U team. What's that like going over to City? How did that come about?
I suppose how it came about was, my first sports would have always been hurling and football, really, and soccer would have been third when I was growing up, you know. It was by chance I ended up in goal. I think the goalkeeper didn't turn up one day and they asked me to go in goal, and I kind of had a hissy fit about it, and I was like, I'm not going in goal, and I didn't want to play in goal. I went in goal anyway and I played well, and I kind of dipped in and out of it for the next year. I think I was about 11 or 12 at that age and stuff that I first went in goal and didn't really. I preferred to be running around outfield, to be honest. And as it progressed then, obviously I played for my local club, Dunmore East, and for a season or two, and then a City club came in, Bohemians in Waterford came in and asked me would I go and play. And I wasn't sure, and I didn't go in at first, and then I eventually went in. I just started getting trials, and then I honestly looked at the trials going over. Never thought in a million years I'd get a contract at a club in England. I'd know it wasn't a dream of mine as a kid, you know. It was more the other sports, to be honest. And then I got offered a contract basically off Man City, and I was like, you know, will I do it or won't I do it or whatever. It was a month into the sixth year, and I was like, what should I do, like, you know. And it was just probably too good of an opportunity to turn down, and it just went from there, really. Like, I think I was just turned 17, you know, October 1999. I'm sure we're going back a long time there, you know. But
United,
it was an experience
that year, no?
Yeah. Maybe the last one that I win as well. But look, it wasn't ambition. I thought, like, I signed a 1 year YTS. Well, at that stage when I signed, it would have been probably a 9 month YTS and then a 3 year pro. And I thought, like, look, this is great. I'll give it a go and, you know, see can make something of it. And that was the start of a journey, I suppose.
I suppose when you look at that City team, there's a lot of keepers there you might have walked with, like Mickey Weaver, Callum Nash. Was Seaman or Schmeichel at the club when you were there at the time?
Schmeichel was there on his last year before he retired. He was the walking wounded then. Like, he didn't train a lot. He was more focused on games at that stage, but mainly the ones I worked with would have been Nicky Weaver and Carlin Nash. Tim Flowers was there on loan for 6 months. He was very good to learn off as well in that. But I was very lucky in a way that I was in and around, like, I was training all the time with the first team keepers at 18 years old, like, you know. And it kind of gave me kind of a hunger for going in and trying to prove, I suppose, them lads there that I fitted in, like, you know, and work hard. Look, I was way off the keeper I am there at that age, but it's all a learning process, you know. I was in the Irish underage teams. I had that experience of playing against better players, and suppose as you're growing up and that, but to train with them every day was a great experience. And one of them got injured and I was on the bench suddenly in the old Division One as a championship now, but I think it was either Nicky done his knee, I think, and I was on the bench for 20-25 games, I think, or something like that season, which was incredible for my age, like, you know. And that was Kevin Keegan who put me on, who, to be honest with you, to this day I'd still think, as a young player coming through, like, he was incredible. Like, I think he's probably one of the best managers I've seen deal with the young boys coming through the club. Like, always made you feel wanting to be part of it. And just, like, well, look, he gave me a chance to be on the bench, and he always believed that I could play. I probably wasn't ready to play at that age, to be honest, but, you know, I was more like counting down the clock and going, like, hurry on, like, we're winning, you know. Yeah. And hopefully the keeper stays fit, you know, because it is daunting at that age to go in and with little experience, I suppose. But look, that was, like, it's a totally different Man City to the club I was at to the club it is now, you know. So you only have to look around the facilities of what they have now is incredible. Like,
do you know Keegan there? I know you're talking about him. What kind of, he obviously did going really well with Newcastle, all that. What made him stand out as a manager? What was his special trait? I know you said he got the young fellas involved, but like walking with him in the training ground, walking with other players outfielders, what did he do? You just thought he was the best.
Like, he had that confidence in himself. Like, I think, look, he was a hell of a player. Like, and you say, like, his managerial records at the clubs he's managed and internationally as well. Like, you know, it's not a bad CV he has, really. But I just felt as an 18-year-old when he first came into the club that he made everyone feel special. Like, he got involved in everything. Like, there'd be head tennis being played in the gym, and he set up like a head tennis league. Like, he was very good at it, in fairness, but and he was hard to beat. But like, he used to like make sure all the young lads were playing, and not just the first team lads were playing it. And out in the training pitch, like, he used to join in a lot. He joined in the shooting sessions and spent, like, he could be finished training, like, as me as a goalkeeper, and the other goalkeepers would be doing a shooting session for half an hour, 45 minutes after everyone else has gone in. He'd be working with the strikers and working on their techniques and everything. But there was no airs and graces with him, I thought. I just thought, like, you know, ultimately, like, look, he got moved on as well at Man City, but at the time period he was there, I thought, like, you know, he got the club promoted and did all right in the kind of the first year in the Premier League. But he was just a very, very good man manager. Like, it's hard to describe. You'd have to be there with him to understand it properly. But it was just very enjoyable, and again, there was a few Irish lads there, like Len Whelan, Willow Flood, Paddy McCarthy. All went on to go because they were in around the same environment. You know, Joey Barton was there. Like, I just thought about the lads that I came through the academy with, that, you know, that went on, Stephen Elliott. You know, there's a hell of a group of players there that would probably had the same experience with him. Like, you know, maybe not the same, you know, same idea of him as a manager. But from speaking to the lads in the past, I think we all enjoyed our time there and made feel very welcome. So it was a good start. It was a great start for me to be there, and it gave me a hunger to improve and give it a right go, really.
We mentioned there Schmeichel, like, arguably probably the best goalkeeper to play in the Premier League, and I know he was walking wounded, but like, you hear stories about him. Does he interact with you a lot? But did you have much interaction with him? Because I've heard stories that he's very quiet. And, you know, sometimes when you're an older player, you're like, I'm not helping one of these younger lads come in and take my spot.
I never felt that with him. Like, maybe, I think with Carlo Nash and Nicky Weaver were there as well with him at the time. And I know they didn't like him when he trained, because he'd probably come out maybe twice a week and train with us and that, but it was kind of fun. It was one of them where when he came out, our sessions changed, and it more was like what he wanted to do rather than what everyone else was doing week in, week out. You know, when Peter was there, it was all like at his pace, and we were basically servers for him. Like, you know, was I a big fan of him in terms of as a person? Probably not. You know, I've heard of before he came, I heard that, like, look, the arrogance and the, you know, but you can't.
He's every right to be arrogant, though.
Yeah, like there's no problem having the arrogance. I suppose you need a little bit of that in any walk of life. You know, it's just probably how I saw the senior players deal with him and kind of interact with him. Like, you know, kind of. I was in awe of him. I was like, oh my God, like, I'm training with Peter Schmeichel, like, you know, little old me from Ireland, like, you know, kind of at 8, 19 years old, kind of thinking, oh my God, like, but it was, I always feel that, like, he was hard to, even at my age, like, I wouldn't have learned too much off him in terms of his techniques. Like, there's not many other goalkeepers, bar probably Casper now, that probably play the same style as him, like, in terms of how he spreads himself and how he deals with certain things. But I suppose just to have him there and to see him training and stuff and see him in games was incredible, really. Like, you know, even as I said, like, he wasn't, you know, he looked like he couldn't move Monday to Friday, then come out on a Saturday, like, he'd probably be man in the match, really. Like, you know, and you know, he was captain at the time, I think, for that season. He was there as well and that, but again, it was another learning curve for me, like, and how to how to do things and how sometimes not to do things, I suppose.
There's a loan move to Peterborough where you made your debut. What was that like, your first senior debut?
I was gas. It was a weird one. Barry Fry was the manager, and anyone that knows Barry Fry,
he's
a character, yeah. Like, so it was an emergency loan. It was the last game of the season. It was meant to be the last three or something, but they thought the keeper was out, but he kind of they managed to wrap him up, and then it was basically for one game. So I remember arriving down the day before, trained. I think they were mid-table, so it was a game really for nothing. It was Brentford away, and I remember pulling up, and I was like going talking to him, trained away, went great, and I went to his office after, and he was like, look, this is how we play, this is what we're going to do, just go out and enjoy yourself, no pressure on you. And I remember coming the next day, and I saw Gaffer, like, I'm shooting back to Ireland the next day after the game, can I get someone to bring my car down to London for me, and then I can go straight to the ferry pretty much the day after the game, like. And he's like, yeah. So he goes, get to this hotel, and we'll get one of the coaches or one of the staff to come off, and he'll drive your car, and he'll be there for you after. So I remember pulling up to the hotel and going, someone will come out, and the next minute the bus drives off. So I had nobody's number, no one to ring. Like, there was no WhatsApp group back then. Like, so I'm thinking, going, like, what do I do here? Like, so I ended up following the bus the whole way to the stadium, like, thinking, going, like, did they even know I'm here? Like, you know, and I had to find.
Yeah, did you not get a phone call or anything? Like,
no.
They were just going to the game without you.
Yeah, like, I was like, well, what do I do here? It's probably my own fault for not getting the car and going, is someone going to drive for me, or do I drive myself or whatever? But because it's kind of over there, like you said, managers don't like players driving to the game. But it was just like, I just felt they forgot about me, and I pulled up to the stadium. Brentford's old stadium now, and there's no car park there. You have to find at the park on the street, like, hope for the best with it. And I remember coming in then the turnstile saying, I'm a player, like, I'm playing, and kind of convinced someone to let me in. And I went in, and I remember walking in, and he was like, where were you? And I was like I was driving behind you, I was trying to flash and wondering what was someone going to stop or whatever. But anyway, look, I went out and played, and I think we drew the game. I think it was 0-0 or something like that, or maybe it was definitely a draw, I think, anyway. But that was a good experience, you know, and in a kind of an old style football ground back then, I suppose, it was good, like, you know.
And then just a little spell at Swansea, how did you find that?
Again, like, I suppose, you know, how it came about going to Swansea was a strange one, I suppose. Like, I was at Man City, obviously, at the time, and Kevin Keegan offered me a 2-year extension to my contract, you know, and I had an agent at the time who, you know, look, I don't have many regrets in my career. I think everything happens for a reason. You make decisions and that. But I had an agent time that didn't inform me correctly of the like, I knew they were going to offer a contract, but he took 2 or 3 weeks to come back to me and say, oh, they have a contract there for you. Like, so I was kind of chasing it, going, is there anything there? And he was like, no. And Keegan said, look, we've sent the offer to your agent. Can you make a decision by the end of the week? I was chasing and couldn't. And then he was telling me, like, oh, look, I think it's time. We have a club interested in you. Like, and I was like, all right, like, what's the interest? And he said, oh, they're looking for a first team goalkeeper to be either number one or number two. Like, they need 2 goalkeepers. So I was like, all right, it could be a good opportunity, maybe, like, you know. And it was the club of Sheffield United. And I knew somebody that was scouting for Sheffield United. So I was like, something's not right here. And, so basically what the agent was doing was he was saying to go back to Man City looking for more money for himself and more money for me. But I didn't have a clue what they were even offering. I just assumed there'd be a little bit more, and got called into the office anyway. Man City said, look, your agent's wrote a letter. It's a bit ridiculous. I think we wanted you to stay, but we clearly can't agree on something. I'm like, I knew nothing about it. Like, you know, I'm just like going, like, I said, I want to stay. Like, can we get it done? And he goes, look, it's too late. Like, the date's gone on the contract to be signed. Like, and I was like, right, okay. So got rid of that agent anyway. So, that was disappointing. Like, that was like, I was like, oh, well, I had a 2-year development there at City, like, to continue learning, getting better and around a good environment, you know, and then lucky enough, I suppose, you know, I was suddenly left without a club, and, at 21, and I was thinking, where the hell am I going to go? And lucky enough, Brian Flynn, who was the manager at Swansea, he obviously had seen me play some reserve team football because he used to be manager at Wrexham. And he obviously, we'd played them in friendlies and stuff. And I think I played against a couple of his teams and stuff. And friendlies, and I probably did quite well. So I went there anyway. And it was a big drop down for where I was at. Like, it was down in the Division 3, which would be League 2 now, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I was like, right, I'm starting from scratch again. Like, you know, going into men's football properly. You know, it's down to me now, you know. So played a number of games. And I remember going away with Ireland once or twice, and I missed one or two games, and then I didn't get back in the team. And then we were in the under 20 World Cup, which was moved to December in Dubai for some reason with Ireland. And I went away for a month there. So like, it was a stop start kind of first year there. And then Kenny Jackett came in as manager. And, you know, like, I always felt like no matter what club I was at, I always go in and train properly and learn every day and get better every day and try to be the best trainer, especially in the goalkeeping department and that. Like, but it just never seemed to go for me, no matter what I did. Like, think we win in 4-3, and the manager would be telling me, like, oh, you're going to we'll get you in this week, or we'll get you in next week. Look, just be patient. And, like, it was just never, never going to happen for me fully there. Like, the club had a bit of success, I suppose, and obviously they've kicked on since, but you know, again, he asked me, did I want to stay or did I want to go? And I just said, look, I think it's best for me to go. I don't think you're going to play me. I don't think I'm going to get any games here. So, and to be honest with you, the level I was at, I was like going, well, if I'm not playing at this level, I think it was League One. The guy would have got promoted, so it would have been League One. I was like, well, like, I don't see the point of being there. Like, you know, it's not like you're in a Premier League club where you might be a bit more satisfied being a number two or something, or number three maybe at times, but yeah, so I left. I ended up leaving there, like, and taking a chance that my next club would be the one that I play some games.
What made you decide to come back to Ireland?
I think always, like, I was always a bit homesick being away. Like, it was always the little bit of, like, you know, not that you felt like you're missing out what's going on at home, but it was just like, you know what it's like over there at times, that you're kind of sitting in there, you go home in the evening and it's just you and four walls, really. Like, you know, times have changed now where you have WhatsApp and you have Skype and you have video calls, and you can, it's probably a bit easier to be away from home now, like, you know. But back then I was kind of like, you know, I suppose at that time at Swansea, like, I suppose what you're earning and stuff as well, like, was it enough to keep me over there? And it was like, you know, you're not going to be able to retire on that. Like, you're not going to be able to save a lot as well, like, in terms of what you're going to be earning every week and what you're coming away with. And that was a factor as well. And what made me come back to Ireland was I was in a hotel in Bristol with my agent. I'd agreed to sign for Bristol the next morning, Bristol City. And I just remember in the hotel, and I was chatting at home to the family and stuff, and I was like sitting in the room, like, just thinking to myself, going, I don't want to do this. And it took me a while to be brave enough that my agent was in the kind of the next room or just down the corridor. It took me a little bit of time to go, like, am I brave enough to turn down a contract? Like, I don't have that and it's concrete. I didn't really have a name over in England at that stage in terms of, you know, your reputation kind of gets around as you go on, whether that means on the training pitch or whatever, what you do on the match day or whatever. But I remember knocking on my agent's door at 10 o'clock and I said, I'm going to go home. Like, I don't want to sign. Like, he said, what do you mean you don't want to sign? You know, it's kind of like, what are you at? Like, you know?
Yeah. Jesus, he must have been happy with you there. Like,
no, I was like,
I was saying he's raging, obviously. Like,
oh, he would have been, but he knew from the conversation he had, look, it wasn't for me. Like, and to be honest with you, I just felt like, again, it wasn't much more than maybe what I was going to be on at Swansea. And I was told that, look, there was no guarantees you're going to play. So I felt like I was going to be at worst, probably number two. Like, and did I want to do that and maybe waste another year without playing? But and obviously the seasons are different between Ireland and England. So, like, that was, I think that was June or July that I was about to sign for them. And obviously the season in Ireland was probably three quarters way through at that stage. So I was like, well, he was kind of telling me, if you go home now, like, you probably won't be assigned with anyone until December. So, like, I was like, yeah, I'm happy enough with that. Like, look, I'd rather do that than sign a contract here and not be happy and stuff like that. And just the next day, just went home, got on the ferry, and that was it. Like, and then obviously, you know, with my agent being Eamon Collins, like, he had plenty of connections in Ireland. He said, look, if it's Ireland you want to go, we'll get you a club, but it'll be December sometime roughly that you'll have to probably maybe agree to sign with someone. And I remember I went in and trained with Shells a few times when Pat Fellin was there and stuff like that. And Shells were a little bit in turmoil at the time with money problems, like every League of Ireland club. But yeah, so like, I was just biding my time, and then Pat left Shells and went to Derry, and I met Pat and he said, do you want to go to Derry? And he said, look, Pat, I said, if I go to Derry, like, I might as well be back in England. Like, it's further away from where I want to be. Like, and, you know, it would have been probably a good fit working with him, but then obviously Bose came in, and you know, I had 2.5-3 good years at Bose, to be honest, like, which really probably kickstarted my career, to be honest, you know, by going there.
Did you think when you were coming back though, you were like, that's the it, I'll never go back over again, I've had my chance and it's up now? Do you know, like, no disrespect, but like, if you're coming back, surely that's in your mind thinking you've given up now.
Yeah, like, it was never, even to this day, like, I still never had huge ambition to live in England, like, you know, or live in the UK, I suppose, that, you know, I suppose by signing for Bose, and it was the time when the league was spending a few quid on contracts and stuff, and especially after the first year I had, I think I had a very good first season there, and basically like my contract doubled the second year or something like that. And I was like, well, look, if I'm earning this for the next 10 years or 15 years, like, you know, I don't need to go back to England. I'd be very happy at a decent enough wage. I can do other things. I'm an hour and a half from home, and, you know, I can come and go as I please with that, and a bit more freedom. And to be honest, it was felt like a club where I was really wanted, you know, and is really part of, like, now, fair enough, you can argue the League of Ireland's not the Premier League or the Championship, yeah, or League One, but I was in League One in England, and I've always said to myself, like, I didn't want to go down too far down them lower leagues for too long. Like, you know, full credit, yeah, to the lads that, like, you know, when they, maybe I know lads that played in the Championship and Premier League and they dropped down the leagues and they're happy to go here, there and everywhere. That just wasn't me. Like, you know, and when I went to Bose, it was felt really part of it. Obviously, little did I know that the economy was about to crash a couple of years,
yeah,
later, you know, and that was a big problem. And that probably convinced me. And obviously, you know, after Bose, Ipswich came in for me, and Roy was the manager, Roy Keane was the manager. And, you know, when he comes knocking, and I just felt like, look, I don't think the league is going to be, you know, going to be fairly bad the year after, and I was warned they were looking for pay cuts and stuff like that. I was like, look, this is only going to get worse and worse. Like, I said, what do I do? Like, and I ended up leaving, I suppose.
What does that phone call go, that Ipswich are in and Roy Keane is interested in you? Because obviously that's a huge compliment that someone like Roy Keane likes you.
Oh, it was daunting, to be honest. I never shit myself as much when I first met him. Like, obviously,
how did that first meeting go? So how was that? Where did you meet him?
So I remember getting on the flight with my agent, and we went over to Ipswich, and it was probably our season had just ended, so it was November time. So obviously I wouldn't be eligible to play till January the 1st or whatever. So I arrive over about 10-11 o'clock in the morning, they're out on the training pitch, so I'm brought out. Roy comes over, shakes my hand, and like, I'm literally shaking, going, nice to meet you. Like, think going to call him Roy or Gaffer or Mr. Keane or what do I call him? Yeah. And obviously I was with the player liaison officer at the time, and he was bringing me around and showing me the training ground. And Roy said, look, we're out training, watch training for a bit, and then I'll come in and see after. I was watching training anyway, and then the player liaison said, put me into his office. I'm sitting in Roy's office on my own, like, and thinking, going, what do I do here? Like, how do I, like, the whole way over, I was like, how do I approach him? How do I speak to him? Do I say nothing? Do I say a lot? You know, and it was kind of like, you know, because obviously in many people's eyes, Roy's a hero in this country in terms of what he did on the football pitch, you know, and then obviously being a volatile character, and, you know, fairly opinionated. It's like kind of like, well, this could go really well or really bad. Like, and I always think first impressions are important when you meet a manager. Like, you know, so obviously he came in, he just, he was just like talking to, it was basically at the start, it felt like talking to a friend. Like, I was surprised and I was like, well, I actually feel comfortable enough here. And I was like, we were chatting away and he was like, what's your ambitions and what do you want to do? And look, we've been following you a while and this and that and everything. And I was just like, just telling him about like, look, I want to play and I want to do well. And like, obviously with you there and wanting me, look, you know, I want to come over and give it a go and stuff and all that kind of stuff. But it was just sitting there and I was like, Saipan came into my head for some reason. Like, and I remember just sitting there going, the way the conversation was going, it was kind of like, it was getting pertinent. And he was talking about like, oh, you like, if we come over here and play, like, you should be looking to get into the Ireland squad. And then he mentioned that Alan Kelly, obviously, who's the current goalkeeping coach at the time, whatever. But like, and that's how Saipan came up, because Alan was saying, I don't think he was his biggest fan, Roy's, whatever. Like, obviously, there's a bit of history there about what happened. And I was like, what happened? Basically, said, what happened? Like, and he goes, and just goes, everybody knows what happened. And then that was, he didn't really say much. And I was getting braver with the conversation. It was just like, felt normal and that. But I liked him. I liked him from the time I left the club. I liked him. Well, actually, by the time he left the club, he got sacked before I left. But it was just like, I'm actually going to be playing for Roy Keane here, like, you know. So I went over in January, and the first game he put me on the bench, and it was Leicester away, and I was out in the warm up, and I tore my ankle ligaments in the warm up, like, and I was like, oh, here we go, like, and I remember going into the dressing room. It was in the warm up, so it was normally the manager's the one left in the dressing room while everyone else is out doing the warm, whatever, and he was in doing his notes or whatever, and I come in with the physio, and he's like, what happened to you, like. I'm sitting going, he's going to think I'm a right plonker here. Like, I've just literally come over and I'm injured now for him. Like, because I'm sitting up on the bench and I have these kind of, I got sent boots by Nike at the time. Like, I managed to get a kind of a sponsorship with them, and they were kind of blue and white ones. And I don't know what they were called, Tempos 60s or 50s, or I don't know what they were back then. And I just remember looking at my boots thinking, going, You're a goalkeeper, like, what the hell are you wearing them blue and white boots?
Especially him with his Diodoras back in the day as well, weren't they?
Yeah, so I always had them thoughts in my head going, like, he's just looking at me going, like, you're, like, you know, what the hell have I brought over here? Like, you know, but look, I got back in, then about 3 or 4 weeks there, I got fit. I played to the end of the season, and I think I did quite well, but I suppose off the pitch then, I was still homesick and trying to adapt to being back over. It wasn't the easiest off the pitch. You had a lot of time on your own, I suppose, over there. But you're lucky, you get on with it. And then obviously came in pre-season, next season, played a few games and then broke my ankle. And then about 3 weeks later, Roy left, you know. And I remember sending him a text message saying, look, thanks for the opportunity, and didn't expect a reply, but I got a reply off him saying, look, you never let me down, and best of luck with everything, and so on and so forth. And, you know, Roy, like, look, I'm sure it's been well documented about his time as manager at Ipswich and other clubs, I suppose, but, you know, he can be harsh on players. He can be, you know, he can make you feel very small.
Is he ever harsh on you?
Not really, because I think the one thing he always told me when first meeting, he basically said there's three things he looks for in a player, like, be on time, train hard, and be respectful to everyone in the building and around you. Like, and he'd always said, he said, there's not too many players that he come across or he's managed that has all three. Like, so I made sure that, well, I think I'm that way anyway, like, but I made sure that I was in early in the morning training. I was out on time on the training pitch. I trained hard and did my best. And then, look, he had no excuses. Even if he had a bad game, he'd have a go at you. Like, look, I remember him, I think it was across one time I came and punched it and they scored off the rebound or whatever. And he's like, just come and catch the ball. Like, and he was like going like, oh, you're in the gym every day doing squats and you can't get above a player and come and catch it. You have to, you're under pressure to punch it. I kind of half bit back and I was like, oh Jesus, like, I better not do that again. But he kind of, I remember he pulled me after, said, look, I don't think he did that often, but he kind of pulled me and just went like, look, I like that. And yeah, I like that you're a bit fiery back at me. I don't see that enough in our dressing room. Like, you know, and it was by accident really that I did it, to be honest. And I was like, oh, I shouldn't have done it. But not many players really spoke back to him. Was kind of like, he'd never scream and shout, rarely scream and shout. It was more kind of, he would talk to you like we're talking now, and he would tell you how bad you are, you know, at times. And if he felt you were weak at all, or a character that he didn't like, and there was probably a lot of them in that squad that felt that he didn't like, that he'd really go bad on you. Like, he'd really, you know, he'd really have a go at you. Like, you know, I think it's documented that himself or Damien Delaney, who we know, like, they never really saw eye to eye, but I think it was more for the fact that I think Damo was from Douglas, and I think Roy's from Mayfield, isn't it? So it's basically across the water from each other. And
Southside, Northside.
Yeah, so like, I think that was always it. Like you Cork lads have a thing about you that, you know, they have that mental toughness. Yeah, it's us against the world, or we're better than everyone else. I know what it is, but he just felt Damo. I'd always felt like Damo was like, Damo would be at the back of the bus going to the game with big white headphones and all that. Like, and you could see Roy, like, he pulled him up before, like, on, like, he didn't like that about him, and it was just maybe a little bit too flash for him, maybe, and then maybe at times they were maybe mightn't have had the best game or whatever, and Roy would maybe go at him a little bit or whatever, but he wasn't the only player. But I mean, look, I still think, like, regardless of what happened there, it was a hell of an experience, you know. And you know, I was disappointed to see him go, obviously, but you know, you move on, and that was it really. Like, but you know, If he rang me up tomorrow, which is not, at this stage is not going to happen, but and asked me to go play for him, you know, it'd be hard to turn down again. You know what I mean? It's just for that experience, you know.
Like, why do you think it didn't work for him at Ipswich? Because he was successful at Sunderland, but why didn't it work at Ipswich? I mean, you had a good squad there. Like, I was looking up some of the players, like you, Jimmy Bullard, Andrews Towes, and all these kind of lads were there, like, as well. Why didn't it work?
As much as he had good players there, probably enough lads where they probably just had enough of how maybe they were treated and spoke to by him at times. Like, you know, Roy's career, like, look, he played the highest level. He won so much with Man United, did so much for Ireland and stuff, like Irish captain, played in World Cups, you know, and so on and so forth. World Cup, not World Cup, I suppose. But like, I always felt, I know management's tough, like you have to give it a go to understand why things go well or things go bad, but I just always felt that he, like, if he had like a number two that was really strong with him and really trusting with him, that he could go, right, not today, like, or give him a break today or whatever. Like, Roy's thing was that, like, regardless, like, if you win, it's everything's great and all that. But he used to always do, like, if we lost the game, like, you could be in the dressing room for half an hour, 45 minutes afterwards, sitting there in your kit, like, just, and he's talking through the game and talking about, like, how bad everyone is and stuff like that. I just feel at times, if he had a stronger number two at times, I think sometimes I might be able to, like, look, he'll say what he has to say, like, and you do listen to it. But I just think for a lot of players, he probably lost the dressing room a little bit, like, and like, I couldn't get my head around it. I'm thinking, going like I suppose being Irish maybe as well, like, you're used to bollocking, you're used to getting a clip around the ear by your coaches, or no matter what sport you're in, you're used to kind of like, but I think most of us have that kind of toughness in us that you go, look, I'm going to prove a point to you, like, if you're coming at me, like, you know what I mean, or I'm going to prove you wrong or whatever. But I don't think there was enough lads there that had that in them. And like, football's a funny game. Like, lads are there on contracts and stuff, and they've agents, and if they're not happy, if they're good enough, they'll be able to get another move out of it. Like, and probably a few of them didn't. But like, there was, I remember, this is probably how harsh it is, there's one story. I remember, like, it's a right back, he was Canadian. His name's leaving me at the minute, but it'll come back to me. And he basically played a few games, and Roy gave him a new contract, right? So he got a new, I think he signed a 2 or 3 year new contract or whatever. And he done quite well or whatever. So typical, I think it was 22 or 23. So typical young lad. The next week he drove in the brand new Range Rover. Right. So in the Ipswich training ground, right, you drive in the gate and you have Roy's you have the kind of entrance and then the manager's office next to it, right? And it was always like then blinds where like they kind of open and close that way. Like, and there's always one blind open. If the rest of them are closed, the sun will be shining, but there's always one open. And that's when you knew like the manager was in, like, you know, he was, because I don't know whether he
Jamie
wanted,
Peters, like, his name.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. How did you know that? You know too much. anyway, Jamie was, he, whether he didn't care or what, but he played, I think he must have played 10 or 15 games straight in a row, like consistent, did very well, or whatever. Parked his new Range Rover right outside the manager's office window. You know, so, and the lads are coming here going, like, why are you parking there? Like, you better move it. Like, he's like, I know, I'll be all right. All right. Like, so every day, like, there was a training list. So there was an under 23 training list and a first team training list. And there was a few players, senior players, that Roy didn't want in the squad. So they were away with the 23s. Jamie's name comes up. It's there about an hour before training. Jamie's name is up on the 23s. And I was like, shouldn't have parked there, lad. Like, so we're all out in the training pitch, and Roy's normally out first, but he wasn't out that day. And I remember him coming out, and the 23s are over the corner training in another pitch. Jamie's obviously over there with them, and he calls all us in, and basically like has a go with us, and said, like, see that so and so over there, like, give him a new contract. He's walking around, and he's like throwing it back in my face by parking his brand new Range Rover in front of my office. Like, said, who the hell do you think you are? Like, you got to earn that. You got it. Like, and everyone was like, and he just goes, went back off and train. Like, and then like that was, he wasn't in the near the first team probably for, I'd say, a month after that. Like, he punished him bad, like, you know, for three or four games. And that's how harsh he could have been. Like, you know, and eventually you'll just lose players, especially modern day footballers. You're just gonna lose players over time if you do that, like, you know. Like, you'd always be watching players and their demeanor and how they are around the training pitch. Like, lads come out with laces open and he'd hammer them for them. He'd maybe not there and then, but he'd wait for an opportunity and go, well, you cost us the game there because you came out in training on Thursday with your laces open. Like, but that's happening. But that's just the way he is. Like, he has the highest standards of where he was at. And if you're at Man United and your standards drop, you're probably left behind. Like, so I think maybe another side of, along with having a good number two, I think now this is just my opinion. Like, he's done a lot more in the game than me. But along with that, I just think if he was just a little bit more, probably at the standards, I don't think he was able to drop his standards a little bit to come down. Remember, they could go from Premier League, the top of the Premier League, to the Championship, like, and it's maybe a middle of the road Championship club or team, I suppose, at that time, like, that were kind of fighting for that mid table kind of position at times. Like, and I just think it was maybe his standards were overly high and lads couldn't meet them.
QPR is your next move. Was it your decision to leave Ipswich, or was it kind of like, I know it's time to move on now? They don't want me here.
I suppose when Roy left, I said I broke my ankle. So for the rest of that season, I was out. Like, I was out for 8 months, and Paul Jewell had come in. And so I was doing my rehab, and obviously he'd heard things about me that I was a good lad and I played the train and whatever and stuff like that. But he pulled me in. He pulled me in around March and said, "Look, we'd like to offer you a two-year contract extension." Like, and I'm like, I didn't expect that, to be honest. Like, and I was like, right, okay. Like, he said, "Look," I said, "I don't know. Obviously, you're coming back from injury. We got to see in pre-season." I said, "I can't guarantee you anything, whether you're going to play, whether you're going to be number two, or we put you out on loan or whatever. Like, that's up to yourself when you come back." And I was like, right, okay. But in between that, like, I found it tough, probably mentally, I suppose, out with the broken ankle. I was like, you know, found the rehab side of it really, really tough. Like, I've never been out for that long. Like, at worst, I've been out for a few weeks or whatever with niggles or whatever. But to be out with a broken ankle and not being able to do what you kind of go out and enjoy every day, and that was tough. And I kind of said to myself, like, again, it was kind of a toss of a coin: will I sign or will I take a chance? And again, my agent was like saying, like, look, it's a decent enough offer. Like, you're out with a broken ankle. Like, there's not going to be too many opportunities for you. Like, you know, one, you don't know if you pass a medical somewhere else and stuff. So it was kind of like, what do I do? Like, And I went into the manager sitting. He was like, "What do you think?" Like, I'd say, "Look, I think I'm going to move on." Like, and he goes, "Like, well, like, do you have something else?" And I was like, "No." Like, and he's like, "Said, well, we're offering you a 2-year contract." Like, and said, "We're out with a broken ankle." And I was like, "I know that." Yeah. Look, I just think, like, look, you have your own idea. I just feel that, like, you know, I'm going to be another 2 or 3 months on the, like, before I feel fully right. And he goes, "Well, you're back training now." I said, "Yeah, but I'm limping around." And he goes, "Oh, I was going to play you next week against." I was like 3 games left in the end to the end of the season. I was going to play you. Like, it was the second last game. I was going to play you away at Leicester. And I'm like, "No, you weren't." Like, I haven't trained with the first. I've been out with the physios and out with, like, the goalkeeping coach on my own trying to. Like, but he was kind of saying that, going like, "Oh, like you know, I was really going to play you." Like, and I was like, "How are you?" Like, he's only saying that because I turned on the contract and goes, "Look, I'm not going to play you now, obviously, am I?" Like, and I was like, "Grand, okay, look, time to move on." A lot of the players, like, you know, a few players moved on that year, but in the back of my head, I was thinking, going, "Right, look, I have to back myself sometime." I said, "Look, do I want to stay here and find something that I'm going to be happy at?" And I went on for a few more weeks, and then obviously QPR kind of, was in the background. I'm agent had a connection, and he heard that they were looking for a number two. Like, and I remember him ringing me up, and he goes, like, how would you feel about being number two QPR? And I'm thinking to myself, going, is this a proper conversation, or is it just something you're hearing that they're looking for someone? He's like, "No, I've already spoke to the manager. Like, he's heard about you. The goalkeeping coach has heard more about you. They're looking in there, like, they'd like to maybe take you in." Like, and I'm like, going, and I'm thinking, going, like, right, I'm limping around. I haven't trained properly. I said, "How am I going to pass a medic?" And I just said, "Look," in my head, I'm this all this stuff. So I just said, "Look, get me in there. Like, if you can, this is just got promoted to the Premier League." I'm thinking, going, this, you couldn't make it up, really. Like, you know, and I thought, like, I'd be going back to Ireland or I'd be going somewhere else. And I was like, "Yeah, look, I suppose London was an attraction as well in terms of where it was. And it was probably a bit more to do, maybe in the evenings yourself rather than being in Ipswich or whatever." And it was like, "Well, the whole package seems great." Like, and a couple of more weeks went by. It was a bit quiet because the club was being, the old owners to the new owner was trying to be agreed. The club was trying to be agreed to be sold. And Tony Fernandez, who ended up being the owner, was negotiating. So eventually came to the point where I got offered a contract, and it was obviously, you know, contracts, you have to, your agent goes in, negotiates, and they wouldn't kind of come to where I wanted. And then when I went to sign the contract, or the agent looked over the contract before I signed it, it had changed. So we just got up and walked out, and he rang around and said, "Look, Gianni, who was the CEO at the time for Briatore, was the old owner, kind of trying to pull a fast one on, I don't know, a sign-on fee, I think, or something like that," or whatever. And we walked out, and I'm like, "Get back in there. I don't want to sign the bloody thing." Like, the mind is, I know it's a little bit less, but like if I pull it now, the opportunity could be gone. And Neil basically said to the owner, "Look, go away." I was meant to play in a pre-season game 2 days later, or half a game with Paddy Kenny, and that, like, and basically, like, he just said, "Look, give it a week. Don't turn up to the game. I'll have a go at the owner and the board and say, look, we need a goalkeeper in. This is what I want," and whatever. So basically, in between the week, they signed, the club had sold, transferred hands, so it, like, the contract was gone, and then I got a new contract, which was better. So I was like, "Well, this is great." New owner came in and obviously got it sorted and stuff. And the manager basically said to me, said, "Look, Paddy Kenny's my number one. Paddy Kenny will be my number one, whether he plays good or bad or indifferent, or, like, you know, he's my goalkeeper. Like, I just want you to come in, be number two. You play the cup games." And I was like, "Brilliant." Like, and here, and I can think, going, like, I'm not fully right yet, mate. I'm still limping away. But obviously, I knew over time that I'd get better and better, and then I'd improve and stuff like that. Like, I went in and I was buzzing, really. I just enjoyed it. Like, enjoyed the ride, enjoyed the experience. You know, Neil didn't last too long. I think it was about 6 months, and he got the sack, like, you know. But, you know, very thankful for the opportunity at that stage, you know, considering where I was at.
He's mentioning that to you, though. You come in, you'll be number two. Was surely that's part of you thinking, like, once I play well and stuff, you have to put me in if he plays bad. Is that not in your head?
Yeah, like, look, you take what a manager says to with a grain of salt, because obviously results and performances on the pitch will dictate to you how it goes. But I knew from speaking to people, and I knew Paddy previously as well a little bit, that, you know, obviously Neil rated him highly, and he was kind of Paddy's guy, and vice versa, I suppose. But it was just the case, like, I was just happy, like, to be able to get in at that level again. Like, I had experience it at Man City. I'd been in the Championship with Ipswich or whatever. And I was like, look, if I don't take this opportunity now, regardless of playing or not, I said, I might regret it, like, you know. And again, obviously, the contract you're offered and stuff, like it's hard to say no to it, like, you know. And like, it would have been more than what I was on at Ipswich and stuff like that. It was just, I said, the whole package of it weighed up, like, it's kind of like, look, this is a hell of an opportunity for me. Like, I think I signed a 2-year contract initially, and I was like, look, I grabbed it with both hands and try my best. Now, I picked up a couple of injuries at the start, or well, midway through that season, and Paddy got injured as well. He tore his hip muscle in the same game that I tore my calf, and I think that was down to coming back with the ankle stuff. And he was out for a month, and I was out for a month, so I missed actually. I miss an opportunity there, like, yeah. And I always probably the highest level, I always seem to, I suppose, just, you know, just sometimes at the wrong time, maybe an injury or something would happen, and I maybe missed. Now, there's no guarantee. It was Radek Cherny was there as well, who was third choice at the time. Like, for all I know, he could have played him, but like, I felt I was doing well enough in training, and I found a bit of form that I'd be able to maybe get in the team and do well. But I couldn't believe my luck that when I tore my calf, Paddy tore his hip at the same time, and both of us were on the treatment table together. Like, it was kind of, you know. And then obviously, I think a couple of weeks later, Neil left, and Mark Hughes came in then, like, to the end of the season, and the club basically went on, like, we were down the bottom 2 or 3, and I think we won our last 5 or 6 out of the last 9 or 10 to go on a hell of a run to stay up, like, you know. And like, it was a hell of an experience to be able to do that, because we thought we were dead and buried, to be honest, midway through the season. Yeah. Like,
you talk about, like, that survival there. That was the last day at the air you had with City when the league was it?
No, that was the... was that the season after? No, sorry, that would have been that season. Yeah, correct. 2012, was it? Was that the 11 or 2012?
Yeah, 12, yeah. 2012,
was, yeah. That, so,
were you at the game?
Yeah, no, I was on the bench. I wasn't number 2, but we were, like, I was behind the bench, really. I was number 3, because obviously Radek got in them games, and he done very well for when Mark Hughes came in, and obviously he left him as number 2, which was kind of like, you know, I'm kind of sitting on the sides going, Jesus, like, I'm definitely missed a chance here, like, and, you know, see how I go with them, whatever. But that last game, like, was incredible. Like, I've yet to experience that and like it in terms of an atmosphere. In terms of the tension around the place and stuff like that. I suppose I can only compare it to maybe, I was lucky enough to be in the squad for the Ireland game against France for the 2 qualifiers. I think that was the closest thing to it in terms of, like, atmosphere and everything. But it was just so, like, with everything that went on with Joey on the pitch and what he was doing, and you know, he thought he was doing the team a favour and stuff by trying to meet one of the lads to take, you know, to try injure them and maybe get a reaction and get one of their players sent off, which, you know, I suppose in the madness of it all kind of half made sense, like, whether he was actually deliberately doing that at the time and he was kind of calm enough to do that and calculate, I don't know. But, like, to be leading the game with a few minutes to go, obviously, like, lost the game at the end, but I think that kind of kept us up because we were dependent on another result as well. I think it was Stoke done us a favour against, I can't even remember who was the other team.
Bolton, was it Bolton?
Bolton, that's right, yeah. Johnny Walter scored, I remember that, for Stoke, I think. And like, kind of, like, obviously in the last game of the season, fans and things filter through what the score is, and probably disbelief around the league that QPR beat Man City when,
yeah,
we needed something to stay up and they were going for the league, you know. And but, like, you know, look, I think they had something like 30-something corners in that second half. Like, so they had all the ball, all the chances and all that. Like, but it was just incredible. It just went bonkers. I just remember the final whistle going and everyone was celebrating. We were celebrating for staying up. They were celebrating winning the league. And it was just chaos. Like, it was just an incredible experience, like, to see so much drama on the day. And look, that'll be forever coming up on our TV screens, that game, in terms of how they won it. Like, you know, and it's, you know, I always remember the commentator saying Aguero and stuff like that. It kind of sits in your mind a little bit. But it was a great experience to be there, I suppose.
You've like QPR had some players, but like a lot of stories I hear about lads. One name when I'm listening to stuff who keeps popping up is, well, two names, sorry, is Tarap and Boothroyd. I think someone mentioned to me about, or I was listening to Boothroyd turning up, it was at a different club, about in his England tracksuit after getting the cap. What kind of guy was he like when you're on a boat? I don't think he would have went really with Roy Keane, though, from what I'm hearing.
No. Look, he'd done well at Cardiff a couple of seasons before that or whatever, and got moved to QPR. But like, look, if me and you were going for a pint and he was there with us, we probably wouldn't ask him to join us, like, put it that way, like, you know what I mean? It's kind of, he was just, he wasn't the worst of them, to be honest. He was just a bit like kind of away in the fairies in terms of, he's kind of fairly outspoken now on Twitter, I believe, in terms of saying things about clubs, previous clubs being that, in terms of their form and that, like, and I'm like, going, well, you didn't exactly turn up every day yourself when you were training, like, you know what I mean, or on the match day, like, even though he'd probably tell you he did, like, but Tarap, like, in fairness to him, he's probably turned the corner the last couple of seasons. He's back playing for Benfica, and like, in my opinion, if he had the right attitude and the right people behind him, he should be playing for someone like Barcelona or Real Madrid or one of the top teams in the
world. Good.
No, seriously, I've never, and we've all, a lot of his players always discussed that, like, if I had half of his ability, like, I would have had some career, like, you know what I mean? My God, like, if he could, like, he could never, like, talking about dribbling and the ability to beat a player and to beat a player again and to have the full package in terms of going forward. Like, I've never played with anyone like him. But in terms of his personality and stuff, that let him down, like a lot of the lads, he just wasn't a nice person. The stories I've heard, now I didn't see a lot of it with my own eyes before I came to the club, that how he treated the staff around the place, how he treated the dinner ladies and stuff. And I think it was Mark Hughes, Harry, they gave him a new contract. And it was probably the worst thing they could do. Like, they probably doubled or trebled his money that he was on, because there was lots of talk of him going here, there and everywhere. But he just got, after he signed the contract, he just got heavier and heavier and heavier and heavier, like, and just couldn't do it. Like, he'd be blown out of his backside after 10 minutes of training. Like, but that one time that he would get the ball in training, and I remember he used to wear these tracksuit bottoms in the top, and he had a hat on, and when he was in the mood, like, someone like passing the ball or whatever, and the hat would come off, and when everyone saw the hat come off, he went, uh-oh, like, we might be playing a five-a-side or like a three-quarter size game or whatever. Like, he would just get the ball and he'd not make two or three players and put in the top bins, and then, like, you go over to the side and he'd be basically on his knees like that going, but ability-wise, incredible. As I said, like, if he had the right people around him, Barcelona, he should be playing there. But I think the big downfall for that club at that time, with the money that was thrown about and the money they were paying, like, I think it was a little bit of arrogance, because we stayed up because another club did us a favour. We kind of came in and he started signing. The recruitment was poor, I thought, like, in terms of trying to stay up and whatever else, like. So I just think, like, they signed, like, big Chris Samba, Bozinga off Chelsea, remember Sean Wright Phillips, like, great lad, just maybe the wrong end of his career in terms of getting the best out of him, like, just the, a lot of the recruitment was wrong, like, and like they wanted to go from barely staying up to, I remember they were discussing, like, bonuses and win bonuses and you know, if you stay in the league, get a bonus, whatever. Like, they didn't want any bonuses from 10th down. So if you finished 10th above, you would have got a bonus. The players are, like, kind of going, there's, like, we barely stayed up. Like, how are you going to go from there? And, like, he was like, how are you going to go from there to make that big jump in one season, like, or in one transfer window in the summer, like. And the players didn't really believe what he was saying, and it was just like I think we didn't win in the first 16 games, and obviously with Mark Hughes before he came to the club, I was thinking, like, yeah, like, Sparky, like, you know, I've heard he's fiery and I heard he's this, like, he just wasn't, like, I was, whether he just got too comfortable in the job or whatever, or I he just had this belief that, look, we keep playing the way we're playing, we'll win games and stuff. and he just didn't. Like, I think we had a couple of draws, but we won 1-16. And ultimately, like, that season, he got the sack. Harry Redknapp came in and we got relegated. Like, we're just way off it. Like, but again, players are down tools for the manager. They're on huge amount of money. Like they signed, like, Paddy Kenny had left after that season. We stayed up. Rob Green had come in. I spoke to the manager. He said, look, I want you to be my number two. You've trained brilliantly without too many chances. You know, I know you were number three last year, but I want you to be number two. So it was like, brilliant. Like, Rob Green came in, went to Malaysia pre-season. Rob didn't do well in the pre-season games. You know, I was doing okay, but I knew I was never going to be number one. Next minute, like, Julio Cesar comes through the door, like, and like, I don't know exactly what money, but I know Greeny was probably on 50 grand a week. And then 3 weeks later, they signed Julio for 120 grand a week. And Greeny's gone, like, what the hell? Like, you know, because obviously he's clearly coming as number one. Like, so then he's obviously brought him in, and like, the club just went bonkers on wages for a while. And a few more came in that summer, like, and it was just lads that were like, Julio's a great lad, but he was 34, you know, left Inter Milan and stuff like that. And it, like, for lads coming from having so much success to actually trying to scrap around the Premier League, you know, it doesn't work like that. You know, it doesn't. It was just, I just couldn't, like, the stories of it, like, lads not turning up for, like, treatment in the afternoon if they were injured or whatever, and like, lads were getting fined a week's wages, but for some of them lads it was 100 grand. And
that's ridiculous. Like, who was the captain in the dressing room? Like, who pulled? Was there any leadership in the dressing room to say, what the hell on? Like,
there was, but what happened with the club was, so you had a group of players there that had got the club up. Their money would have gone up a little bit or whatever, maybe doubled or whatever, from, like, you know, maybe 10s to your 20s or whatever. But then you have all these players that are coming in that, yes, maybe more ability, but just didn't show up every day. And the lads that were there worked hard or whatever. Most of them worked hard, and that they believed them working hard in the training pitch. And then there was a massive divide in the end of that season, just because the players that came in, like, the foreign lads can be difficult. Like, if you're in a good environment with them and they're winning games, they're great. As soon as you start losing games, it's just down tools. Like, they just, like, no, I'm injured or I'm not playing. Like, I, that season, like, even Julio, like, as much as he was a nice lad or whatever, like, he played 25 minutes in a game or half an hour in a game, and he'd be unbelievable. Like, wouldn't, you know, looked on beat, like, pulling saves out of everywhere and, like, and going, wow, like, what a goalkeeper. As soon as the first goal go in, that was him done, like, you know. And then he would be injured every second game because he knew the team wasn't doing well. When Greeny would play, then I was on the bench then, like, probably on the bench for nearly half the games that season, which in a normal season, if you're number three, like, you shouldn't really be involved, like, unless it's a proper injury. But it was like every second or third game, and Greeny sitting on the bench and going, I bet you I'm coming on in this game. And I'm like, you bet you are as well. Like, in the amount of games he came on in, it was kind of crazy as well. But it was just like, the owners, I think, were probably naive. And, like, I think they had a CEO at the time, that the CEO would go, like, I have to be strict with my budget. Like, that's the max we can go to for this player. But then the owner would be behind, ringing the player behind the CEO's back and going, like, don't mind that. Look, what do you need? I'll give you the money to get you over the line. Like, so there was kind of like, they're just throwing money left, right, and center. They wrote off 100, I think it was, they wrote off 180 million in debt, like, as personal debt for the owners to treat them, like, which is, you know, just sums up where the club was probably, where they probably was at for a few years. And obviously, if you look at the club now, the club back then, like, they're obviously a lot stricter in how they run their business.
Yeah. Moved into Portsmouth happened. How, what happened? Paul Cook linked with that. Was he manager at the time when you went to Portsmouth? Because that's a great club. I always say when I played against them, I was like, it's actually one of the best atmospheres I've ever played in.
Yeah, Fratton Park was brilliant. Obviously, the club had been out of luck for a couple of years in terms of, like, dropping down the leagues or whatever. Obviously, again, probably a club off the field, probably poorly run and money going everywhere. But basically, look, I'd spent 4 years at QPR, and look, I hadn't played many games. And I remember meeting Les Ferdinand, and he was like, look, I think we're going to change the squad. We're going to go with a younger squad. And I think I was 33 or 34 at the time, still relatively young, I suppose, as a goalkeeper, even a couple of years ahead of you, I suppose. But he just said, look, we're going to move on, and, like, we're not going to offer you a contract. And I was like, fair enough. Like, and then I remember being on holiday in Portugal with some friends and stuff, and speaking to the agent, like, going, like, really, like, just sit tight, because normally in a goalkeeping like the way it is now, like most clubs need two or three goalkeepers, senior goalkeepers at a club, like, so you kind of have to sit tight over summer and you hear things and then things cool down. But I remember being on holiday, and funny enough, Portsmouth were in the same places on holiday. So I happened to run into a couple of the lads. I was chatting to them. Adrian's like, oh, you should go up and train with them. Like, but him, I didn't know until the time, but my agent was Paul Cook's agent as well. So obviously right. They were talking, he was looking for a goalkeeper, whatever. But, and it wasn't something in the back of my head, like, yeah, big club. But I was like, do I really want to drop down to League Two? I always said to myself, look, I wouldn't. And he just looked, would you sign a 6-month contract and then maybe get a move in January and play some games, whatever. And that was it. I remember signing the day before the start of the season. I had no real pre-season. I think I had about 2 or 3 sessions, whatever. So I didn't feel right or whatever. And I played, did all right in the first probably 10, 11 games, then tore my groin like fairly badly. I was out for 5 or 6 weeks then. Came back, played a couple more games, tore my calf. I just was like, kind of, oh my God. Like, and I think that was just down to not having a pre-season, not having I was doing a lot of road running and trying to stay fit different ways when, you know, when you're on holiday and stuff, and probably didn't help me either. Like, but, it just wasn't, it just never happened for me fully there, to be honest. I could never find the form that I wanted to find. That maybe I felt I had a QPR, or maybe the confidence was maybe gone a little bit from dropping down the leagues. And then just having the, I suppose, like, inconsistency of playing a few games and being injured. Like, I've never been, bar the one injury, the same as Paddy, I was rarely injured. But I just couldn't find form. And then I remember they just missed out in the playoffs, the end of that season, got beaten in the semi-final playoff to Plymouth, I think. I was injured. And he just said, what do you want to do? And I just said, look, like, I don't, my heart's not in it at the moment. Like, said, whatever, there's a lot of reasons, but I don't know what I want to do. Like, I kind of half thought about, like, giving it up, to be honest. At that time, I was like, I didn't want to be, at the time I said, like, oh, I didn't really want to go back to Ireland initially to play, but I didn't want to go around the bottom leagues and be in League Two and whatever in England. I just didn't see it. I think I could have maybe come home and maybe earned the same money in Ireland, roughly, like, you know, and be a bit happier or whatever. But look, I had a summer off, and eventually I just told my agent, said, look, I'm no interest to go back to Portsmouth. And I actually had one or two contacts here about the League of Ireland, and I had a couple of months off. So I got a bit of hunger. I was like, you know what, I'm feeling good again. I'm feeling good in my body and whatever. And I met a couple of clubs here in Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers and stuff. And I was actually close enough to sign up for Dundalk. I'd went and I'd signed the contract, but something in me now, it was the day after I'd signed for Cardiff, but Cardiff was on and off over the course of the summer. Like, and I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I didn't, like, whether Stephen Kenny believes me now or not, like, I remember sitting there going, see, look, I'm not going to sign. He goes, well, what are you going to do? Like, it's like, I don't know, look, but I'm going to have to sit tight. Like, I'm going to have to wait it out. Like, it's just not exactly what I want. Like, you know, and the next day I'm actually driving around from that meeting. I'm driving down from that meeting. I got a call and said, can you get back up to Dublin Airport, get over to Cardiff? Like, and I was like, what, it's on, like? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, rang my girlfriend, rang my wife now at the time. And she, at the time, I'm still married to her. he goes, look, Cardiff's back on. Like, and I'm thinking myself going, Stephen Kenny's going to be like, going, like, oh my God, like, he's absolutely bullshitting me here. Like, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, and it wasn't that way. Like, and to this day, he probably still thinks, like, oh, well, he's lied to me about the contract. Like, you know, I had a few things that I said, look, at the time, I said, look, I have a few things on that I can't commit to at this time. And went over to Cardiff and met the manager, signed the contract. He initially said, look, I want you to come in, be a bit of the two younger goalkeepers. I said, look, I want you to be a bit of experience. Just get in training, get your pre-season, catch up with everyone, and we'll see where we're at. Like, it happened so quickly, and at the time I was like, right, another opportunity to get back up into the championship and maybe have another go at it, like, you know.
Did you get any abuse signing for Cardiff, having played with Swansea?
No, not really. I was never a big enough name for, I say half the Cardiff fans probably still didn't know I ever played for Swansea, to be honest. But and I was, I think it was 10 or 12 years in between the times I played. So it wasn't as if I was signing in from one club to the other, you know. So, but look, just to have the opportunity to go to Cardiff and again, a big club, and again, everything fitted right, you know, the contract and whatever else. Look, I've always got the question, like when I went to the, like I did so well at Bowes and then to go over to the UK, and I probably played 50, 60 games in the 8, 9, 10 years that I was over there, like, which is not a lot, like, but then I always say, like, to myself, like, right, look, I'm in this, I have one chance at it, I'm going to aim as high as I can. If I fall short at that club, then so be it, but I think I would regret it not going to them clubs and maybe going, no, yeah. I want to go play, I want to be adamant, I want to play. I think probably the reason why I lasted probably so long at each club and got another contract, a second contract, probably are offered a second contract most clubs I was at, is because the way I was around the place, and I made sure that was just the way it was. Like, I was just like, you know, football's a short, you have a short window to get things right, whether it's your contract or whether it's your own, your career. Like, if you don't get it right in that year or two, and like, look, certain players just get moves just by their name, like, which is fair enough, like, but most of us have to earn it, like, as well, like, you know. And I always felt I had to earn my contract. Even when if I signed the contract tomorrow, I always felt, right, I have to go prove a point to get my next contract. And I've been very lucky in that way that, you know, I was at a fairly high level most of it now, albeit I didn't play the games I would have liked to play in, but you know, again, I was at Cardiff, and I got an opportunity under, when Neil came in, the manager, got sacked, Neil Warnock came in, funny enough, and he wanted to play me, and I played a number of games for him, did really well. But ultimately he saw me as a number two, like, and he the goalkeeper that was playing, he wanted him out, and he said, look, I need to get him out of the building. I didn't want him around the play. I think he's a jinx. Neil was very superstitious. And he, like, he'd have a dream the next day, and he could have a team picked on a Friday, he'd have a dream and come in the next day and change. And he's done that with a player before, I think, a striker, said, I dreamed that you're gonna score.
His wife had a dream,
and he played, and then I think he scored or something. So, but he was very, very superstitious in his ways, and that, like, but look, he brought in Alan McGregor after that, and I was disappointed with that. And I said, look, like, I think I deserve to stay in the team. And he goes, look, if I'm taking him, Hull have said that he has to play. Like, I said, look, you've changed our season. Like, I went in, whether it's just by maybe time and everything, but I went in, I think we played 7 or 8 games, and I think we won. Well, we were unbeaten in 6 of them or something like that, you know. So, whereas before, like, they were inconsistent and losing a lot of games, like, but I think it was just a lot of elements came together at the right time. But again, that earned me another contract off the back of that, you know what I mean? And it gave me another chance. But, you know, it was just a good experience again. And, you know, again, I went in every day and tried to work hard and prove people that I deserve to be there, really.
No, and when you changed kits, was there a bit of uproar in Cardiff about that, like going from blue to the red?
So, like, yeah, the Cardiff fans, like, the owner, like Vincent Tan, he, red is a very, they're very superstitious where they're from, like, and red is a good look colour for them. So basically, like, he built a new tier, another tier on the stadium, to make it a 30,000 seater, so there's red on top of one tier. He wanted red jerseys, whatever, and it went down like a lead balloon with the Cardiff fans. And look, I suppose being an owner of a football club, you have to have a thick skin, and he stuck with it, like, you know, and he'd be there in his red jersey with tucked up. If you ever saw a picture of him, like, he's a kind of a funny looking man in terms of, like, his appearance, I suppose, in terms of how he, like, he even dresses, I suppose, as well. But look, he's clearly a clever man, and you know, the business and his wealth, I suppose, speaks for itself. But look, he got it right in the end, and he changed back, and he won the fans over, and obviously we'd end up getting promoted. From considering the season before, like, was a struggle for the club, and we ended up finishing mid-table or whatever, and you know, I suppose success in any football club, you can get away with a bit more. And obviously I remember when we got promoted, so the fans went from actually not liking the owner to basically carrying them around the pitch after when we got promoted, like, you know what I mean? So, you know, obviously if we'd lost every game that season, they'd want Vincent Tan to sell the club and change owners and change manager and that. But success is everything in a football club, because it brings everything together, like, whether it's finances, whether it's the team, whether it's promotion, winning championships or whatever. Like, that's, you know, in sports, you're demanding victory be or wins, because it, you know, that's how your business runs. Because if you're successful, then everything else comes together. Like,
and just looking at your international career, you talked earlier there about the playoff against France. What was the dressing room like after that handball incident?
Bit of disbelief, I suppose. I always remember in the stadium, and like, everyone, like literally, I think everyone in the stadium could see it by the officials. Like, it was just like, we were on the side of the dugout, or at the dugout side or whatever, and you could see the handball a mile off, and then all the replay went up, and it showed that, I think there was a replay up of the goal, and you could see the handball and the goal, the camera angles on it, whatever. Mm. The players were trying to look at the referee, look at the thing, but he wouldn't have it, and he stuck to his guns. And I just remember being in the dressing room after, and Trapattoni was there, and he was just going off in Italian. Marco Tardelli, like, the two of them was going nuts in Italian for 10, 15 minutes, and the players were like a bit down, a bit disbelief what happened. And it was just surreal, really. Like, it was just...
What I could never understand, though, what I always think in my head is, everyone says we got robbed, we would have been in the World Cup, but the game would have went to penalties still. So there was no guarantee you were going through anyway. Like, this law, whatever, we got a compensation payment, the FAI, but like, there's no guarantee. So I don't want... Did anyone ever just turn around and go, we might, probably would have lost anyway in penalties, like, or something, you know?
The compensation's another John Delaney story, but... there's better people to speak about that, but there's not many nations would go looking for compensation for losing a football match.
I know.
You're right. Like, I just think, like, I just think it's how it happened and how the game ended. It was just like, it was over and that was it. And like, if you look at the image, there's always an image of Henri and Donny, Richard Dunn, sitting on the grass after the game. Like,
yeah, that's smug.
He probably can't believe he got away with it either. Like, you know what I mean? And how the hell? Sad way to lose the football game, but you're right. Look, there was no guarantees to go on, but I suppose if they hadn't scored, like, that's as good as I've seen Ireland play against a top team in a long, long time. Like, I remember the first game at home, and the players weren't happy with the tactics of how they played, and it was a bit defensive, sit off and try to stay in the game rather than, like, feeling like, you look at the players they had at that time, it was a fairly decent team, like, that, you know, that 11 anyway. Like, I remember we were setting up for the game the next day, and I think the players took it upon themselves to be a bit braver. Like, it wasn't in what Trapattoni wanted, but I think the players were a bit more braver and going forward and saying, look, yeah, look, you can argue the goal, the handball changed everything. Of course it did, but ultimately, like, we didn't score on the pitch either. Like,
So what happened there? You're saying the players decided, did they get into a room and say, listen, like, when he tells us to be defensive, we're not doing that, or what?
You know what it's like on a football pitch. Sometimes, like, a manager will have his tactics and the players would just see something different. They probably felt, you know, as the course of the game went on, like, because, look, we've one chance at this. Like, we're in the game here. We're actually playing quite well. Like, just, like, maybe pass the ball a bit more than he probably wanted and go at them. Stick to a tactic that probably wouldn't have won you the game. Now, that maybe the tactic would have got you the draw and you would have got the penalties, or you would have, you know, or who knows what way it would have ended up. But, you know, I think sometimes the way Trapattoni and Marco Tardelli work with the English, the barrier of getting things across, from my experience now, look, I hadn't played. I was in the squad 8 or 9 times with him, but I was always in his number 3 or whatever, his backup. Yeah. So, better players than me to be able to speak about it. But I just felt, and what the feeling was, the group, that we kind of, like, you know, we're going to kind of play our way a little bit, like, you know, and, you know, just fell short, unfortunately. Like,
one final question, Brian. You've worked with a list of top keepers. Who's the number one?
By myself, is it?
By yourself. Well, you could be considered number 2 now, Brian, do you know?
Number 3, that'd probably be more. Yeah. Look, it's different. Look, going way back.
Don't sit in the fence now. Give me a name.
in terms of how I worked with them or how they were as a goalkeeper?
As in terms of who would you say was the best quality? Not as a person, anything like that, best quality.
What they've done their careers?
Yeah. No, like as in, you've worked with, say, like every keeper you got, he was the best. I would have been happy to say, look, he was better than me. He's unbelievable. There's no better than him I've played with or worked with.
See, I'd probably say Schmeichel, but then I, because any other goalkeeper looked at it, no matter whether it was Rob Green or Julio Cesar and the amount of games they've played, I always felt short. I always felt I could compete with them because I was at a stage actually classed as a number two or classed as a number three that I was in competing every day with them, that I didn't think they were a whole lot better. It's just that I think they had that like more experience of playing at a higher level, and they've had more matches and obviously been given way more opportunities than maybe I had. Because when I went over, and especially when I signed for QPR, I had a couple of moves after, I was probably classed as like, oh, he's a good number two for you. Like, you know, he won't let you down, whatever. But, you know, I think managers like their number ones and number twos and number threes or whatever, and they like to stick at that unless there's really a massive change. But like Peter Schmeichel in terms of what he did, I think Julio probably, you know, if you look at what he did in like Brazil and Inter Milan, and he was incredible, like from a distance, like, you know, and again, similar probably size to me or whatever. Look, I always felt like maybe if I was 6'2" or 6'3", I'd probably have a few more games under my belt. Like I always generally, maybe sometimes managers kind of got in the head that like, oh, maybe I'm not tall enough or whatever. Like, but you know, 6'1" is not big enough. But like I always model myself off Shea, and I like, you know, the way Shea trained and the way Shea would be up there for me. Shea Given, like I think like that was incredible training with him, like, and seeing how he conducted himself on the training pitch and his ability, like, and obviously, again, like, he never got probably the top moves to Man United or Arsenal as much as it was muted, maybe because he didn't come for crosses, like, and that's just my opinion, but I think that's how his career went, that, like, there was so many times he was linked with Arsenal, and then going, why haven't they took a chance on him? Like,
yeah, especially the keeping problems they had throughout the years.
Must be a reason, like, and I just think it's because, like, and a few players have come out since, they know that he's a goal line goalkeeper, as you call it, but you know, he kind of defended. But like, I'm lucky to, a lot of goalkeepers I worked at that, you know, on paper, like, are unbelievable. But then when they come in the building, you kind of go, oh, well, like, you're good, but, and like, you're a heavy goalkeeper, but like, I feel like I'm there with you. It's just, I couldn't get managers to believe that I was better than them. Like, you know, maybe I'm too blinkered in terms of where I'm at with it, but I mean, like, just in terms of training with them, and then you have a different view from watching someone off in the distance or watching them on Match Today or watching them on Sky Now, in terms of going, like, geez, a hell of a keeper, like, and all of them that I've played with have had very, very good careers. Like, you know, I've had a fraction of what they've done in their careers, but you know, I would probably say, like, look, I'd probably say Schmeichel, Shea Given, and a toss-up between Julio Cesar and even Greeny was good, like, even good to train with and see how he trained and stuff, like Rob Green and that. But I would say them three or four are probably the top.
Not bad company, not bad names. Like
as I said, I'm very lucky. I probably don't appreciate it enough that maybe the goalkeepers I have learned off, and you take a little bit off everybody and I'm some good and some bad, where you put it into your own game, I suppose. But I mean, like, you know, I suppose 18 years old, and you see Peter Schmeichel coming through the door, like, and he's as wide as he is tall, like, you know what I mean? So he's kind of daunting in that way. But I mean, you know, that was he was very good, in fairness, like, and the career he's had. Like, obviously his son has kicked on again, like, which I didn't probably, when he was a bit younger, I didn't think he'd have the career that he has had, but like, he's turned into an incredible keeper as well. Like, so, I remember Casper actually was there when he was 14 or 15, came in and trained when he was on his school holidays. Like, but he had his dad's arrogance. You could see that if he got a chance, he was going to be happy. He was a goalkeeper as well. Like,
listen, Brady, that's brilliant. Thanks for your time today.
No bother.